Okay, we're beginning here three lines down on the top of Lamed Daf and Aleph. Itmar, Lul, Patuach min Abayit L'Aliyah. So in their day, the way that they created a ability to access the upstairs from the downstairs was that they cut a hole, a skylight in the roof, and that gave you access. Generally, they had stairs, but they're not stairs like we have, but they had a ladder that allowed you access from the downstairs to the upstairs. So I'm Rav Huna. Im yesh lo petach echad, chayav b'mizuzah achat. But there's one entranceway, you're chayav in one mezuzah. There's two entranceways, you're chayav in two mezuzot. Rashi describes over here, if you have a situation in which you have a hole in the ceiling, and then you have a ladder or stairs that are going up, then you have free access between the upstairs and downstairs. Generally, we're speaking about two families or different parties living upstairs and downstairs, and so they want to protect their privacy. So what they did was they built an enclosure around the ladder, around the staircase. And they would do that both downstairs and upstairs. So downstairs, you create an enclosure around the ladder. That means the person who descends can't enter the area downstairs until the doors open from that enclosure. And the same upstairs. If you put above the opening upstairs an enclosure, then even someone who ascends upstairs can't exit into the upstairs until the doors open. So that's what it's saying here. If it has one petach, meaning that if they only built it downstairs or they've only built it upstairs, you only need one mezuzah. If they did it in both places, I mean, they built it downstairs and upstairs, then you have a door to enter the stairs or ladder from the downstairs. They have a door or to exit from the ladder upstairs into the upper chamber. And then you have two ptachim, and each one of those will be chayav in mezuzah. From Rav Huna, this is the important din that comes out of Rav Huna. Hi, Indrona. We had Indrona yesterday's daf. Rashi said it was a kambara, a chamber, a room, Didle Arba'a Babet, that has four different entrances to the room, Chayaba Arba Mizuzot. You need four Mizuzot, you need a Mizuzah on each door. Pshita. So isn't that pretty straightforward? What's the Chiddush here? Anytime you have a door, you're going to have a Mizuzah on the door. So the din before, you had a door upstairs, downstairs, a Mizuzah. Here you're telling me that you have multiple entrances, Mizuzah on each door, you're not telling me anything new. What's the Chiddush in this? Lotzricha. Even though he normally goes in through one of them, even though one entrance is the most used or most often used entrance, nevertheless you put mezuzot on the other doors. This is soter, what we saw in the Gemara yesterday. That was the case by Rav Huna. By Rav Huna we saw that v'ha'u pitzkwa d'av'ayel ba Rav Huna l'bei midrusha v'avi l'mezuzah ha'u ragil hava, that he was ragil. When it comes to mezuzah, you go after the most common or frequent usage. And Rashi over there said if you have two entranceways, and one of them is used more frequently than the other, then only the one that is frequented requires a mezuzah. The other one does not require a mezuzah. Gemara here is saying just the opposite. Even though there's one door that's being used, nevertheless you require a mezuzah on all the doors. How do we reconcile? Rashi already recognizes that. Rashi brings two answers to this problem. First one is, there are only two doors. You have only two doors, and one of them is the most often used, the frequently used, then the other door, in a sense, becomes dismissed. In contrast to this door, it's one versus one. On the other hand, if you have three other doors besides this door, even if you use this one frequently, you can't say it overrides all the other entrances that come in. And so Rashi's first difference between the cases is the number of doors we're speaking about. And that way he thinks that it's particular that there are four doors over here. Because if it was two doors, you would go there haragil. You would go after the most common usage, the most frequently used. On the other hand, when you have four doors, it doesn't matter if you use one more frequently. You can't put a mezuzah on all of them because one door is not going to override the possibilities of all the other doors being used at some point in time. Therefore, you require a mezuzah on all of them. That could be for fundamental reasons, in terms of bitelut, which is one can be mevatel another door. One door can knock out another door. One door can't knock out three other doors. Or it could be from a perspective of maradayin, which is that when you have two doors, people understand why there's a mezuzah on this door and not that door, because you're using this one and not that one. When you have four doors, it's hard for people to understand why there's no mezuzah on this door and no mezuzah on that door. They don't really understand the whole layout. Somebody on one side or the other side is not going to understand why there's no mezuzah. So it could be an issue of marat ayin as well. Lishna achrina mitshuvat agonim. Another option comes from the Gonim. Aleich achar ragil. That is sheir ragil shebnei adam regilim et seif lavobo. That's when people, multiple people, multitudes use it. Umute pitcha de Rabbi, as opposed to the case of Rabbi, that was the doorway of Rabbi versus the doorway of Rav Huna, the Rabbi sheino soy elolo livado. That's only for him himself to use. The difference of the number of people that use this as an access and egress. If it's large numbers of people or more than one person that uses it, then it takes on a shame of a doorway. And then that doorway will be subject to the necessity for a mezuzah. On the other hand, if it's just one individual who uses the doorway, it's like a private door that only he himself uses, nobody else uses it, then that door may not require a mezuzah because that is not ragil. The ragil is not, again, defined by if only one person enters and exits that door. It's if that door is particular for that individual. That means that nobody else would use it. It would be disrespectful to go through Rabbi's door into the Beit Midrash, and nobody else would do it. If Rabbi is the only one happens to go through it, but anybody else could go through it, I think there would also be considered to be ragil or open to the public usage. So it's not about if you own your own house, and you are one person, single person living in a house, and you only go through that door, therefore it doesn't require mezuzah. No. Because other people, if you invite them in, if you had other people come over, they would use the doors just like you use the doors. In that case, it would require a mezuzah. But if the door is built for one person in particular, and only that person uses it because his kavod or whatever reason there is that he would be the only party to use it, then maybe that door does not require a mezuzah because that's not considered to be ragil. And that's the difference between what we saw on Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, which is what we're seeing over here. Amar Meimar, Hai Pitcha, Dakarno chayav mezuzah. You have a doorway on the angle, meaning that it's on the corner of the house. It does require mezuzah. Amar le Ravashi le Meimar palet le Ptzimim. You're missing mezuzot. You're missing the uprights for the doorway because here you have it at the corner of the house. There are no uprights. He says Amar le Adei or Harei Ptzime. They are the Ptzimim, and as Rashi explains over here. That means that, Klomar, Elu Rashek Tolim, Hein Tzimim. The ends of the walls that come to that corner, they form the mezuzot that are the structurally the doorway. So even though you don't have mezuzot in the sense of a door frame where the mezuzot faced each other, they're parallel to each other on the vertical, nevertheless, since at the end of each wall, the wall ends, and those two walls create a frame that allows you to put a door between them, that already is considered or classified like a door frame. Yesterday we spoke about pillars that were just load-bearing. But over here, when you have a whole wall that's going down and the wall ends, a wall that ends creates a mezuzah, and that's important for the next halakha, which we're going to see now, which is that you can sometimes create a door frame by having a wall end in the middle, meaning that you have that in houses sometimes, where you have perpendicular walls. When the perpendicular wall comes into the other wall, that creates a doorway or passageway to go through. That perpendicular wall ending creates a mezuzah then on one side. And that actually could then create a chiyuv mezuzah, which is what the Gemara is going to say now. Rav Papa, it's unlikely to be Rav Papa given that they're going to Mar Shmuel's house. And therefore you can see on the side that it's Rav Mori. Ikalevei Mar Shmuel, because Rav Papa is a Talmud of Abaye, which is three generations after Shmuel already. It seems unlikely that it was a Rav Papa, so more likely that it was Rav Mari, Ikla the Beit Mar Shmuel. Kazuahu Pitcha, Tohavale Elapatzim Echad. So a doorway that only had one mezuzah, Mismola, on the left side. Vavida Le Mezuzah, and he made a mezuzah. Amalei Keman says, who are you holding like? Rabbi Meir says, I'm holding like Rabbi Meir, that a single mezuzah is enough to obligate you in mezuzah. So he says, Imar Damar Rabbi Meir Miyamin. Rabbi Meir only says that when you have the mezuzah on the right side. Mismol Miyamar. Since when does he say it on the left side? Mahi. What's the lima that you're trying to bring me? The Tanya, Beitcha, Biatcha Min Hayamin. It says, Beitcha, it's a play on the word, Bi'a, to enter, to come in. So Biatcha, when you enter, on the right side. Atawa Meir Min Hayamin, Oino Min Hasmol. Does it mean on the right side or the left side? Tamalamar, Beitcha, Ma, Talmud. What exactly just happened in that braita? Right? It gives you two words, plays back and forth, and says, I solved the problem, but it's very hard to understand how they solved the problem. So, Maraba, derech bi'atcha min hayamin. Anytime you enter is min hayamin. Dikhiakar inish karei diamina akar. Bereisha. The person lifts up their foot to start moving, they lift their right first, and therefore derech bi'atcha, if beitcha requires it be the way that you enter the house, the way that you get into the house first is extending your right foot first. That is a halacha that is application. Even if a person is a lefty, we still put the mezuzah on the right side of the doorway. So when it comes to left and right, when it comes to determining where to place an object, then it doesn't matter if you're righty or lefty, because it goes by the robe of the olam, where do most people do or what do most people place it. When it comes to things that are particular to an individual, then that lefty and righty makes a difference. So for instance, we have that with regards to putting on one's shoes. So the halacha is that you put your right shoe on first, then your left shoe. How you tie your shoes is influenced by whether you're lefty or righty. Putting on the shoes, you always put the right one on first, the left one second, even if you are a lefty. Because the Rova Olam puts on their shoes on the right foot, and there's nothing about particular about being a lefty that has influence over the fact that you're going to choose the right shoe or the right foot over the left foot. On the other hand, when it comes to tying your shoes, we do that connected the tefillin that you tie. And therefore, for a righty, they tie their tefillin on their left hand. They're going to tie the left shoe first, then their right shoe. And then for the lefty, puts their tefillin on the right arm, they're going to tie their right shoe first, then their left shoe. By mezuzah, it's the same thing as putting on your shoes. You're trying to determine which side the mezuzah goes on. You're not going to look at the particular individual, is he a lefty or righty. We're going by Rova Olam. The Rova Olam enters in for their right side, and the right side is their favorite side. Therefore, if we're going to choose which side to put the mezuzah on, it's going to be the right side of the doorway. That's true here as well with Okar Raglay. What we're saying here is, how do you know that the mezuzah goes on the right side? It's because the Beitcha, we darshan as Derech Biatcha. When you enter into the house, that's where the mezuzah should be. Well, when you enter in the house, you put your right foot first. Not everybody is right-footed. Some people are left-footed. Doesn't matter. The majority of people are right-footed and extend their right foot first. Therefore, the definition of Derech Biatcha here is going to be on the right side. And that's how he knows that it should be on the right side. We learn it out from here. So the first way that he determined that we go by right is based on the drasha of Amuzuzot Beitecha Visharecha and Beitcha is Derech Biatcha. And the fact that you extend your right foot first tells you put it on the right side. They learned it out from the Pasuk in Navi, which is the story by Yoash and the Haftorah that we read for Parshat Shkalim, which is Vayikach Yoyada HaKohen Aron Echad Vayikov Chor B'dalto. So he took a box, he drilled a hole in its side, Vayitenoto Etzel HaMizbeach MiYamin. He put it next to the Mizbeach on the right side, Vavo Ish Beit Hashem. When people entered into the Beit Hashem, Unitano Shama HaKohenim Shomrei HaSaf Kol HaKesef HaMuva Beit Hashem. Then they would put all the monies that were brought to Beit Hashem into the box, because the problem was that people were bringing monies to the Beit HaMikdash, but they weren't being end up used for the budget of the Beit HaMikdash. Somehow they were ending up in the pockets of the Kohanim. So they changed the system by which people who gave money or donated money to Bet HaKabayit, instead of being given to the Kohanim for them to keep in safekeeping, quote-unquote, it was put into a big box, into a big treasury box. He sets up this treasury box to the right of the Mizbeach. And as Rashi explains over here, when you're entering into the Azara, you enter in from the eastern side, and you're walking towards the west. And it says over here, as you walked into the Beit HaMikdash, the box was sitting right of the Mizbeach, which indicates that's where the natural tendency, or the natural way which people went, was to that right side of the Mizbeach, and that's why they would bump into this box that was on the right side of the Mizbeach. And that's what it says here. Because when they came, Vayitenu to Mizbeach Yamin, bivo ish Beit Hashem. But on the right side, when people went into the Beit Hashem. So that means that that's where you intended to bump into it. The right side is where people would come to when they entered into Beit Hashem. Coming from the eastern side to the western side, they would be towards the north. They'd have this box, and that's where people would come when they entered into the Beit Hashem. And therefore, anything that is placed, Derech Biah, should be placed on the right side, because that's where people favor, or that's where people gravitate towards as they come in. So those are the two possible limudim as to why we favor the right side. Now, my Rabbi Meir. What's Rabbi Meir? He said he was holding like Rabbi Meir. We don't know what Rabbi Meir says. The Tanya. Bayit she'en lo ela patzim echad. If a house with only one mezuzah, Rabbi Meir mechayev mezuzah, chamim putrim. Rabbi Meir says you are chayav. The chamim say that you are patur. My time of the Rabbanan. What's the reasoning behind the Rabbanan? mizuzot k'tiv. The pasuk is read mizuzot in plural. That's how we read it. Mizuzot indicates two. My time with the Rabbi Meir. The Tanya mizuzot. Shomei ani miut mizuzot shtayim. So like the Rabbanon, if you have a word in plurality, the minimum is two. So that should require two mizuzot. Shomer mizuzot beparsha shnia. When it says mizuzot again in parshat vayayim shamoa, mizuzot appear in parshat shema. And then in Parshat Vayayim Shamo, those are the two parshiot of the mizuzah. In both cases, the word mizuzot appears there. She'ein Talmud Omar. Why do I need mizuzot to be written again? Havi ribui achar ribui. It's an inclusionary term after an inclusionary term. Ve'en ribui achar ribui elu lema'et. And when we have a ribui achar ribui, we say that is coming to the ma'et. Me'ato akatuv le'mizuzah achat. The pasuk took it back down to one mizuzah. Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. That's how Rabbi Yishmael gets to this limud of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Enu Tzarich. Shu Omer, Ala Mashkof, Vashtem Mizuzot. By the Pesach, or the Korban of Pesach in Mitzrayim, it says that you put it on the lintel and on the two Mizuzot. Shein Toa Malomar Shtei. Why does he have to tell you that put it on two Mizuzot? The implications from that are clear. Matal Malomar Shtei, Zebana Av, Komakom Shneemar Mizuzot, Enu Elachat. That means that anytime it uses the word mizuzot, it would imply one, ad shifereit the chakatuv shtayim. So the pasuk tells you two. Shtei mizuzot implies that a mizuzot by itself would not have meant two mizuzot, it would have meant one of the two mizuzot. Shtei mizuzot tells you both or two mizuzot. So here you have, similar to what we have with the word aid, same thing over here. Mizuzot by itself is going to mean one until the Torah tells you shtei mizuzot. It also somewhat correlates with the din of mizuzah. Here you can see that the Gemara is connecting between the mizuzot of the Korban HaPesach and mizuzah in general. Yesterday we spoke about the idea that mizuzah provides a certain amount of shmirah to the house. Again, the Rambam, we said, rejected that pretty outrightly. He does that in Parakei and then in his conclusion in Parak Vav. But nevertheless, the Gemara itself, both here in Avodah Zarah, bring psukim that say that shmirah. Another indication of that is what happens in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim, they put the dam on the two mizuzot, the mashkof, that provides protection for the mashkit coming in. So in some sense, the mizuzah, which is a correlation with that mizuzah of Mitzrayim, and you can see here the Gemara is connecting the two using the term mizuzot, so just like by Pesach it provided protection, so to the mizuzah might be providing protection as well. That's another indication, the fact that mizuzah provides that shmirah. All right, so now you have Rabbi Meir, who says you have one mizuzah. And that one mizuzah is enough to be mechayev you in a mizuzah to be placed on it. Although, you had the qualification here that that's only if it's on the right side, not if it's on the left side. And it has to be, the mizuzah is going to be hung on the right side, so you need the thing that's identifiable upon which you're going to put the mizuzah to be on the right side. If you have a flush wall on the right side, you're less likely to understand why there's a mizuzah there, because there's no mizuzah to put up the mizuzah on. Just a long wall over there. There's nothing indicating an end. Therefore, it has to be on the right side, that mizuzah, in order to create the chiyuv mizuzah and the placement of mizuzah on the right side. That's why Rav Murray, when he went to buy the house of Mar Shmuel, says, I'm not sure why you're putting up a mizuzah here, where there's a mizuzah only on the left side. All right, Tanu Banan. Uch tabtam, yachol yichtevenu alavanim. This pashtura pasuk is, is that you're going to write the mezuzah directly on the doorposts. That's what it sounds like from the pasuk. Doesn't indicate that you write it on something, then affix it to the doorpost. Sounds like, write it on the mezuzot. Nemar kan ktiva, but nemar lahalan ktiva. Says ktiva here, uchtavtam. It says ktiva somewhere else in the Torah. Malahalan al sefer. Just like in that other place in the Torah, it's on a sefer. Avkan al sefer. So too here, as we written on parchment and not written on the doorpost itself. Rashi claims that the sefer that we're speaking about here is a get, which says v'katav la sefer kritut. So over there you see that the ktiva is associated with sefer, and so just like there it's associated with sefer, so too over here. And if you look back, Rashi on Lamed Bet Amud Bet not only quotes v'katav la sefer kritut, he also brings kedov zod zikaron b'sefer on Lamed Bet Amud Bet for the gzeir shevel ktiva ktiva. That could be another possibility, although Rashi does not quote that over here. The Baalei Tosafot do not agree with that. They think that because of a sefer by the get, the Gemara interprets to mean sfirut varim, that you have to give over the information in it, but there's no necessity for it to be on a cloth. You're allowed to write it on a leaf. You're allowed to write it on a horn. You're allowed to write it on any material that is detached, and you can hand it to a woman that can be used for a get. There's no requirement, absolute requirement of a sefer. And everybody says, I don't see from there how you have a gzeirah shava that helps you to say that you need the mezuzah to be written on a sefer. Therefore, he opts for two other possibilities, which is either Parshat Sota, where you have to write that on the cloth, the Parshiah that they're going to erase in the Mea Marim, or he says it's from the Parshat HaMelech, where the Torah says that he has to cut the blow at Mishneh Torah Zot. He has to write for himself a second Sefer Torah, and that's clearly all cloth, and has a din of Sefer. So therefore, you learn from Sefer of either Sota or the Sefer of the king, that you need to write it on cloth, according to Balei HaTosafot. What you're suggesting is that Rashi is just telling you that you don't have to write it on the doorposts. It's not telling you how you have to write it, it's just telling you that you don't write on the doorposts. And that's enough to come from Sefer Kritut. Again, you can see it's not written on the doorpost or anything that's affixed. It has to be something that's detached. So that may be what Rashi is coming to teach you. Tosafot says you learn two pieces of information. You need to know that it's detached, and it's written on cloth. You learn both of those from this, and therefore Tosafot says you need examples of cases where the ktiva is not only on something that's detached, it's also on something that is cloth. So that could be the machlok between Rashi and Tosafot as to what you're learning from this braita. Then the braita continues. So cloth the derech zo. Maybe you should look the other way. Never kan ktiva, but never lan ktiva. It says ktiva over here by uktavta mamzuzot beitecho visharecha. So it says ktiva by har grizim and har eval. The avanim that they bring over there to make into the mizbech, since you have to write the sefer on them. Malahalan al avanim, there they do write the sefer on the avanim. Avkan al avanim, so to over here you write it on the doorpost. Nir elami domet, which is more similar. Danim ktiva nuheged dorot, miktiva nuheged dorot. We deal with things that are of a internal nature, things that are applicable to us today. From things that are applicable to us today. Now I'm going to learn about ktiva mezuzah, which is a mitzvah that is continuous, something that is relevant to us today, from the ktiva that once happened by the stones of Har Gerizim and Har Eival, where they wrote the Sefer Torah on the stones. As opposed to, whether you talk about a get, sota, or the Sefer Torah of the Melech, all of which are applicable halachot, Lidorot, they apply forever. They're not something that is unique to a particular time period or only once. Kumoshin Nemar La'alan, and like it says further on means in the Navi, this is the pasuk we quoted before for teaching us about dictation of the sofer in order to write. Whether he has to read mitoch haktav, or does he need to actually read it out loud, mitoch haktav. And we brought this pasuk as the raya for the last eight sukkim in the Torah, as to how they were written and what Moshe Rabbeinu did with those last eight psukim. When they inquired of Baruch Ben Neriah as how he came into this Megillah that he's reading to them, they asked him, where did you get it from? So, Rehu Mehem Baruch, Mipi Vikra Eli, Yirmiyahu from his mouth orally would read to me or say to me over his nevuah, it's a Devarim Eila, these words, Vani Koteva La Sefer B'diyo, and I'm writing down on a Sefer with ink. So you see from here that there is seemingly a requirement for it to be written, first of all, ala sefer. And number two is that it be written bidyo, be written with ink. So that's what Rashi says over here. Klomar, mihai krai nofka, the sefer bidyo bainan. From this pasuk you see that when there's a requirement of tiva, ani koteiv, al sefer bidyo. That's how you write. You write on a parchment with ink. And similarly, the mezuzah has a requirement of tiva. That requirement will be patterned after or similar to that which we find in the Navi, that's written on parchment, bidyo. So Amar le Ravacha Breda Rova le Ravashi Rachman Amar Mizuzot Vatamar Nelif Ktiva Ktiva. Seems like a strange limud. Torah says write it on the doorpost. And you say, well, I got a Gezer Shava that says write on a piece of parchment. Why would you take the pasuk out of the pashtut pasuk? Especially, number one, since you have evidence of writing on stones that happens by Har Gerizim and Har Eival. And number two is, one of the proofs, at least you're bringing, is from Navi. So that means that until the Navi came, how did we know that it was written on parchment and on ink? That the Gemara says in many places that the Loch existed beforehand, but he just wrote it down, or he just gave evidence of it. So it existed beforehand orally, but then they wrote it down. So that's not the strongest of questions, but still a question. Why are you taking the Pasuk out of its Pashtut? The Gemara answers, Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Uchtav Tam. Tiva Tama. that Uchtavtam comes to teach you that it must be a Ktiva Tama or a Ktiva Shlema. That first of all, we saw already, means that you can't be missing any letter. The Parshiota of the Mezuzah have to be exact and can't be missing anything. Number two, as Rashi says here, Ktiva Tama, the Ein Ktiva Tama Al Eitzim Vavanim El Al Sefer. The only way to get a clean and proper writing is when you write on parchment, when you write on something that is made for writing, not when you're trying to etch it into stones or you're trying to write it on wood. That's not going to give you a good, clear writing. And so therefore, if you're going to be writing clearly, Ktiva Tama, and you want a Ktiva Tama that is both whole and proper lettering and a consistent lettering, that's only going to happen when you write on parchment. It's not going to happen if you write on the doorposts themselves. So internally, Uchtiva Tama tells you that it's not really on the mezuzot. Vahadar al mezuzot. So then after you've done Uchtav Tam, Uchtiva Tama, then al mezuzot beitecha v'yisharecha. Then you place it onto the mezuzah. Uma'achar techtiv Uchtav Tam. But once you have the pasuk Uchtav Tam, ha'gzer shava lomali. Then what do you need gzer shava for anymore? The Uchtiva Tama already tells you you need to write it on a parchment with ink and make it clear and consistent. Then why do I need gzer shava Uchtiva Ktiva? Because if it was for that reason, I would say write it on a stone and then put it up on the doorpost. So yeah, it might be hard to write on a doorpost that's upright already. You're trying to etch it into the doorpost. But if I have a nice tablet that's laid out and I can write the letters and chisel the letters nicely, and then I'll write that on the stone and then put the stone onto the doorpost. So just like the doorpost is made out of stone, I have the right to do this as well as in stone. How do I know that it has to be written on parchment? That's what we need the Gzeres Shava for, Kamash Malan, that teaches you Sefer. So there are two different issues here. One is a Ktiva Tama, which tells you that you cannot write it on the doorpost itself because you're not going to get a Ktiva Tama. The second thing is, on what material should you write it? That's given by the Gzeres Shava to tell you it should be Al Sefer. Al Sefer B'dio, that has to be done on parchment with ink. Those are the two limudim. One to tell you not on the doorpost, the other one to tell you on the parchment with ink. That's how you're going to do this in the end and not put up some tablet or something that's carved into stone or writing it on some other object, almost like what happens by the get. Even though by get, they say it's katav sefer, there you're allowed to write on any object that's detached. You're allowed to write it. That's not true by the mezuzah. Mezuzah's particular necessity to be written like a sefer, that it has parchment and you. Arba parshiot shebit filin makvot zo et zo. The four parshiot of filin are makiv each other. Vafilu katav echad mea akvanen. Even one letter missing from them is problematic. Pshita, why would you have thought otherwise? Amir marav, lo nitzrocha ela le kotzo shoyud. You need to, for the kotzo shoyud, it's the same answer that we gave by the mezuzah. Of course, if one letter is missing, then you have a problem, then you don't have the parshiot that you're looking for. So the answer is that even the kotzo shoyud is missing. Machloket, Rashi, and the Rabbeinu Tam back on Chavtet, Amud Aleph, as to what the Kotso Shoyud is. Rashi over here says Kotso Shoyud, Regel Yemini Shoyud. It's the right leg of the Yud. That's what shapes out the Yud. The Yud is a little thing on the top, a head on the top, and has a right leg coming down. Rashi says that's Ma'akev, that right leg coming down. The other hand, Kotso Shoyud, the Rabbeinu Tam says, Umefarish Rabbeinu Tam, Du Rosho Kafuf. That is actually on the left side. It's actually climbing up. There's like, it comes to a point on the left side. That's Kotzel Shoyud. There are those also who think that the Rabbeinu Tam, it doesn't mean the Kotzel Shoyud on the left side. It actually means the lower. There's a little piece sticking down on the bottom side. And that's how you know, actually, if you find a cloth from a good sofer, you can tell if he's makbid about this Rabbeinu Tam, which is that if you have a Yud, first of all, of course, you have a right leg. That's something that's clearly makave. And then on the left side of the Yud, they most sofrim have it come up to a point or to a line at the top on the left side, but they also pull a line down. So there's a little line sticking down on the left side of the Yud. So you'll see that in a well-written cloth that the sofer will make sure they accomplish that for their Beinu Tam, not only for the top, but also coming off the bottom. So that's one of the ways to check for a good ktav. They also will be makpid that inside the hay, that the hay is made up of a dalet, with a yud inside of it. And that yud that they make inside of it, how much does it look like a yud, or how yud-like is it, also is a good indication of a sofer is being makbid on certain things, like this issue of the Rabbeinu Tam. Vanami pshita, that's also straightforward. We need it for the other Rabbi Yudah. It's similar again that we saw by the mezuzah, which is that not only is there this requirement kosel shuyud, which is straightforward because that is the shape of the yud. If you don't have the surat ha'ot, then you don't have the yud. If this is a requirement in surat ha'ot, then you don't have a yud unless you do what you're supposed to do with the yud. Then what is it here? It has to be mukaf gvil. That is, when you write the letter, it has to have white around it on all sides. You first of all can't do what's called chok tachot, which means you carve out the letter by through the inside, which is that you shape it by taking away ink rather than putting ink down. That's number one, one problem there. And the other problem comes up when you get attachments between letters. If the letters connect, then you don't have mukaf gvil, and that'll make it pasul. Two things that come out of this requirement over here to have it be mukaf gvil is number one, that you can't do it through chok tachot. You can't do it by carving away ink. You have a blotch of ink, and then you make the letter by scraping away the ink. That you can't do. And number two is that each letter must stand independently and can't be attached in any way. If any parts of the letter are attached to another letter, or internally it's attached, that ruins the letter because it's not mukaf gvil. And we said back there on Daf Kaftet, mukaf gvil even applies to the yud inside of the hay. That itself has to be mukaf gvil as well. It's not just the outer letter. It has to be mukaf gvil. Tanan banan. Okay, here comes one of the more difficult drashot in Shas. Litotafot, litotafot, litotafot. What they are doing is quoting the three times totafot appear. There are four parshiot in which the tefillin are mentioned. Those are the four parshiot at tefillin. And three out of those four parshiot, the tefillin shalosh is called totafot. And the fourth parshiot is called zikaron beneinecha. So here they're quoting you from the three parshiot that have the word litotafot, litotafot, litotafot. Harikan dalit, divrei Rabbi Yishmael. You have four parshiot. That's how we know it from the totafot, the totafot, the totafot. Not really clear how you get it from this. What you would assume is two of them are written chaser and one of them is written male. And in that way you would get totafot, totafot would tell you 1, 2. And then the totafot, the third one, which is written male, would give you 4. The only problem is, to be Malay and a plural, you'd have to have the vav between the pei and the taf, which we do not have. In our Sifrei Torah, none of the lototofots are written with a vav between the pei and the taf, and that runs into a huge problem, which the Balei Tosafot are trying to address. They address it here, as well as when we saw it earlier, they also asked the same question, which is that we don't have this. It says, v'teima heichemash metrei. Since when did one of these totafot mean two? If you can pull the vav out, you can see here one of these litotafots has a vav in the middle. It's interesting here that the Gemara here, as opposed to in Sanhedrin's Zvachim, brings the words properly. In the Gemara in Zvachim, when we learned it, and in Sanhedrin, it actually brings the litotafot spelt with a vav between the pei and the taf. And so that's the bigger problem, is we don't have that in our Sefer Torah. Over here, it conforms to what we have in our Sefer Torah. The Bible does what say, well, if you can move that vav from between the two tets, that'd be really helpful. We can move it over. But he says that's not how we do gorin umosifim or dorshim. This idea of pulling a letter off and moving it around within a word, we only do it when the letter is found at the beginning of a word or at the end of the word. We don't pull letters out of the middle of a word and move them around. If you have a letter in the beginning, sometimes we move it to the end or we move it to the word beforehand. That's only when it's at the end or beginning of the word because that makes sense somewhat. Because if you think of the Sefer Torah, like the Gra says, as being dimua, it's really all a string of words, a string of letters. How you divide the letters up, it makes it into words. So we divide it this way, but if you somehow say, well, if you divide it this way, then that first letter might belong to the last letter of the previous word. Or the last letter of this word might belong to the first letter of the next word. That's possible because of this idea that it was all one continuous stream of letters. So that makes sense, but to pull a letter out of the middle of the word, we never have a drush like that of Gorin and Mosifim. So we're running into a problem now. Where is this drush from that there are four totafot? That leaves us with two options. Either our Sifrei Torah are wrong, which is going to make all our Sifrei Torah sulim because there's no totafot written Malay with it between the pay and the tough, or we don't have four parshiot for its fill-in. So that's one of those two problems. It's a pretty serious problem. So the Rebbeinu Tam comes to the rescue over here. Vayesh Rebbeinu Tam, devav kama, devil lito tafot, mukmina besov kiluktiv lito tafot. It says one of them has a vav at the beginning of the word. That vav we're going to take and move between the pei and the taf. And that is a case of gorin and mosifim, that we're allowed to move the letter because the letter's at the beginning of the word. We don't pull it out of the middle of the word, but we do pull it out of the top, beginning of the word. And that extra vav is going to be the way that we solve the problem over here. Says Bakasha, the Perusho. The only time we move a letter is to move it to the end of the word or to move it to the beginning of the word. And Tosfot says, not only do we not pull a letter out of the middle of the word, we also don't pull a letter out and put it into the middle of the word. And so he says that the Rabbeinu Tam's suggestion is nice because he found a way to get the vav from the beginning of the word, not the middle of the word, but its placement into the middle of the word is not so simple because we don't find that in other places. And the Gemara has this Gorina Mosifim, it always puts it at the end, does not put it in the middle of a word. You don't need that whole drasha. Tat bekatfe shtayim, pat pafrike shtayim. The word totofot is really a contraction of two foreign words, each of which mean two. So tat in the language of the katfi means two. Pat or katfe in the African language is two. Now when I put totafot, it's really a contraction of two and two. So that gets you to four. So now Rabbi Akiva's drusha avoids the whole problem of the plural totafot or the malay totafot. But then he opens up another Pandora's box, which is, why foreign languages, how do they have impact in terms of the definition of a Hebrew word over here? You have a Hebrew word and you're telling me that the etymology of the word is some African and Katfi language? So from that we get these four. So that's a difficulty that is then presented by Rabbi Akiva's position here, that it comes from interpreting it that way. It might be that he's just using these not to tell you that this is the etymology of the word, but rather to tell you that this is a hint inside of the word. The word encapsulates within it. How do I know it's four? Not because of these two languages, but these two languages help us to remind us or tell us that the word is comprised of four parts to it, or there are four parts to the totafot. Again, it's a somewhat difficult drusha. The easiest way to answer the problem of tat, katfi, and pat ba'afriki is to say that it happened in reverse, that they are derivatives of Hebrew, and they preserve parts of the Hebrew language that we find pieces of Hebrew that get put into other languages, and therefore it's the other way around, that the totafot was a word that was known to mean four, and then in these two languages they borrowed pieces of it, and that's how we know that working our way backwards, the etymology of the word is totafot, and that the tat and the katfe are indications of the fact that there's four compartments there. Alright, so the Shittim Mikubetz and Olal brings from the Bali Tosafot and other places that discuss why according to Rabbi Akiva you don't end up then with 12 boxes and not four boxes. He says, because when the Torah gives you a number in a particular place, then that number, when they repeat it, is not telling you to add on another one of that number. When they just give you a word that doesn't have any number associated with it, then we look at it. If it's in plural, it means two. If it's singular, it's one, and then we add them up. But when the word itself is indicative of a number, then we don't say that you multiply that number by the number of times that the word appears. So like, unlike, when you have Sukkot, and you have it plural and singular, we add them up to figure out how many walls. Totafot, if you have it in plural and singular, you add them up. But if Totafot means four already, then you don't need to go and say, oh, four, four, and four, because text is just repeating the same four that you find in the other locations. All right, Tana Banan. You would think you write them on four different parchments, and then you put them into four different compartments within the tefillin, in four different pieces of leather. Tamal Omar, ule zikaron bein einecha. Zikaron echad amarti lecha, velo bet v'gimel zikronot. It's one zikaron and not multiple zikronot. Ketzad, how do you accomplish that? What do you do? Kudvan al David orot. The answer is, you write them on four different parchments. This is for the tefillin shel Rosh. And you put them into four different compartments in the Rosh, but they are made out of a single piece of leather. As Rashi describes over here, they have a defus, they have a shaping mechanism. The oar has to be stretched over some sort of mechanism that then presses into it and clamps onto it, so it forms the shape. And that's how tefillin are made. If you clamp them and place them on these forms, over time the ore hardens around the shape that you make, and that's how you make this. You can take a single piece of leather and push it over these four different areas of a clamp, and then clamp them together. It'll create a tefillin with four boxes, four compartments in it, even though it's made out of a single piece of leather. And so that's if you go to the tefillin factories that over here in Zanoach, you can see them doing that, actually making and putting on the forms to do it. there's some that are done totally by yad. Others today that do it through the pressing and forms and using clamps. So that's a hidur that some people like to do it by yad, but that takes many, many years. You have to order them when the kid's born so that they're ready for his bar mitzvah. Otherwise, most people today use mechanical instruments to do it with clamps and forms that allow you to make the tefillin. If you write them on a single parchment and then place them into the four batim, yetsa bidiyavet. Yetsa bidiyavad. Now it's not clear here, it's a machloket amongst the poskim as to whether when we say he wrote on a single orb and then he cut them up, so now they're cut up and divided into different parshiot, or others who say that that's way too simple because then it's clear that you have four different parchments. It's no different than writing them on four separate parchments. Rather, it's when the parchments are still fully intact. It's either where, you can see this in the Sheet of Mekbetzot Gimel, they cut part of the parchment between the parshiot, but left them attached, either at the top or the bottom. So they separated them or severed them, but not severed them completely. He says here, going to Shechilek the Mato, Umichobarim Ktzad the Malo, Beniach Ma Shenechlach the Mato Bedalib Batim. That which is split below, he puts into each one of the batim, but there's this attached part that floats on the bottom. The Taz brings just the opposite, that the split parts, their blank parts go up into the batim, and then the parshiot are found together below and attached in the areas below the batim. But either way, b'diavad, it is okay to do it in that manner, instead of writing them as four separate parshiot and four separate klafim and then putting them in. B'tzarek she revach b'neem divrei rabbi. Rabbi says there has to be a space between them, the way Rashi explains it over here. So we have revach ben a parshiot. You have to have a space between the parshiot when you write them, because if you're going to have a single or and run it from bayit to bayit, you need blank space between the parshiot in order to run it from one bayit to the next bayit. So that's why you need it to have gapping. You don't need that. Vishavin, they agree, shnotein chut, o mishicha ben kol achad ve'achad. According to Rashi, that means, if you write them on a single parchment, and then you want to run them from bayit to bayit, then you have to put something in between to indicate that there's a spacing between them, and that there has to be some sort of string or some sort of that is placed over there that indicates that there's a separate. But if the batim themselves are not clearly identifiable, then you have something that's pasul. The Baal Yosef over here say v'shavin shenotein chud mishicha ben kol achad v'achad, that you have to take a string or something between them. Hainu dafka b'ktubot bor achad. That may be only when it's written on a single parchment. About Badalara wrote, lo. But when it's written on four different parchments, you don't need that. V'yesh no'agim, and some people do this, afilu Badalara wrote. Even if you have it on four different pieces of parchment. Although the Sheet of Mekbetzot Odala brings a totally different approach to what it means over here to put the chut, the mishicha, and that is v'shavin. Yesh mifarshim ala klaf achar shenichrach. After you wrap it up, kol parsha v'parsha levada korech alea chut o mishicha. You have to tie a string on that cloth afterwards. V'yesh mifarshim achar shenitparu shemarvir chut shel tfira ben kol bayit v'bayit. After they are sewn together, meaning that the tefillin shorosh are a hinge that opens up when you close them and stitch them down, after that you run like the equivalent of floss between each of the batim to make sure that they're absolutely separated, the four compartments of the batim shorosh. And this view within the Sheet of Mekubetzot echoes a sentiment within the Rishonim that this last part of the Gemara was not actually about the parshiot, when we said Revach Benham, but about the batim themselves. And then they read the Gemara in the following manner. Tzarech Shei Revach Benham Divrei Rabbi. Rabbi says that on the four compartments there has to be air space between them. The Chachamim Omrim Enu Tzarech. The Chachamim say they don't need or necessarily have to have space between them. Bishavin, and they agree, shenotein chut, o mishlicha ben kol achad v'achad. You have to put in a string or some sort of divider between the four compartments in order to be clear that there are four compartments. The main cheret sevnikar, because if their split is not visible from the outside, sulot, they are problematic. And that's why the chachamim didn't require you put airspace or revach between them, because string or the thin string that goes between them, it's already an indication of that split or that gapping between them. And again, as long as the charitz is visible from the outside, that is sufficient. But if you do look at tefillin that were from years past, they used to not glue the four compartments together. And therefore, over time, they used to split apart. It used to get like a fan look in the tefillin. And actually, if you have pictures from Reb Chaim of Brisk, his tefillin actually intentionally had the four batim not glued together. And they actually fanned out on the top because of this idea that there's a necessity for there being gapping and clear delineation between the four compartments. In the old days, they used to put glue, which was problematic because it was being held together by glue, which might be an issue. Today, they are able to do it by putting enough pressure or force on the tefillin that the four compartments stay together even without glue. So the tefillin today are a much better quality tefillin, and in fact, they don't use glue, but they do press the compartments together. But in the old days, when they didn't have that ability to do it through the pressure, then people who didn't glue them together got that fanned look in their tefillin shorosh. But those might have been more kasher because the addition of glue to glue them together was very problematic. So over here you have a number of requirements. Some of them are makev, some of them are not makev. The first of which is or echad. From being from a single piece of leather, that is makev. The construction of the shorosh can't be from multiple pieces, it has to be from a single piece of leather. That's makev. The second thing is that the four compartments of the shorosh, they have to be clearly identifiable. They have to have a charitz. They have to have a division or separation between them and identifiable separation between them. If it doesn't, that's also me'akev and they are psulim. The last thing is that you write four separate parshiot to insert into each one of the four compartments of the shel rosh. They should be written on separate parchment and each one individually placed in. But if you do write it on a single piece of parchment, that is not me'akev, b'diavad, it's okay. It depends as to whether you have to have space between them or no space between the parshiot. And then, on top of that, even the chachamim agree, if you don't have to have space there, at least when you run them between the different batim, that you have to have some sort of string or something that indicates or divides them between the four compartments. Otherwise, it looks like one piece of leather and you don't know where the divisions are or how it divides up. Here you have to fold it up and like put a string there to divide between the different parts or the different parshiot that are found there. Alright, so now Tosafot also over here notes that the word totafot, how do you know where to place your tefillin? Where does totafot mean on your head that you have to place it? It says, near the lashon totafot hu rosh itzel ha-metzach. That is the head by the forehead. Kamo, and he brings a proof from the Mishnah in Shabbat that says totefet v'sarvitim, which are a type of jewelry worn by women. Totefet is like a metal plating that goes across the front of the forehead of the woman. And sarvitim are these things that hang down from it on the sides. So that's it. The totefet tells you it's something that goes across the forehead. And he says, "Einu kli lash makevet kol ha-metzach." It's like a crown that goes around the entire forehead. Inami nikru totafot al shem shehem berosh ben ha'inayim. They're called totafot because they're found between the eyes. Lashon habata. That totafot means to look out. Kamo shvil v'azil bar avza v'enohim mitayfin. And its eyes are looking out or are searching around. V'chein tzitz. And he says it's similar to the word tzitz. Lashon habata. Lahatzitz is to look or to peek or to peer over. Shamu l'mala ben shnei v'seinav. Because that's where the placement of the tzitz is as well. It's across the forehead ben einayim. Totafot, he says, has to do with gazing or seeing. Or it has to do with totefet, which is like a crown that goes around the forehead. So it's either named for the placement near the forehead or the front of the head, or it's named for between the eyes because it means to peer or to gaze out. The connection to the tzitz is important because we know that the tefillin and the tzitz we're going to see upcoming in the Gemara have correlations between them which have impact halacha on the way that you have kavana with regards to the tefillin. And so bringing a correlation both in there and the etymology of the word only serves to strengthen that connection between them. The other thing that Batoso wants to discuss here is tefillin, nirei lashon vikuach, means to argue. Kamo, v'yifalel, sha'asap lilot im kono, which is the Gemara by Pinchas. It says, v'yifalel Pinchas in tefillin. And that v'yifalel is meant to be from the word tefillah, which means to argue or to disagree or to judge, which is also used v'yifalel. Hashem shem edut v'hochacha. That's because they function as a witness or as a statement of fact that Hashem is upon this person. And that's what we say. This is the clearest indication of the fact that Hashem is with you because you have tefillin shorosh which are visible to the outside, that you have Hashem upon yourself and that Shem Hashem nikra alecha, that is part of an edut, testimony like being in court. So v'yifalel is judgment or being in the court setting or arguments that are presented in a court setting. So v'yifalel or tefillah involves that. It's judging oneself, the yifalel. And there's also tefillin, which are edut, They are testimony to the fact that we are the representatives of God, and God's name is called upon us. That's how Tosafot says in terms of the etymology of the word tefillin and totafot. The Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Ketu Kotvan, how do you write the parshiot of the tefillin? Tefillah shayad kotava al orachat. The tefillah shayad is majisha. You write them on a single parchment, and that single parchment is then inserted into the single box that makes up the tefillin shayad. Suppose the tefillin shayad, we have four separate compartments. By the tefillin shayad, you only have one compartment, so it's written on a single parchment, and that's placed into the tefillin shayad. Im katva ba'arba urot, v'nichal ba'bayit echad yatsa. So here, like we had by the tefillin shorosh, there's a bidiabad. By the tefillin shorosh, you're supposed to write on four different parchments, put it into the four compartments. If you write it on one parchment, and then insert it into the four compartments, that's fine. And in the reverse, it's true by the tefillin shayad. Tefillin shayad should be written on a single parchment, go into the single box. But if you write it on four different parchments and place it into a single box, yatsa bidiyevet. It's areich l'davek. But you have to attach them together. You have to somehow, b'tvirah, Rashi says, either by stitching them together, or b'devek shekorin glued. You have to put it together either with stitching or glue, you have to glue them together. Shenamar v'yelecha lo'ot al yadcha, because it should be an oat. An oat is a single oat. K'shem she'ot achat mi b'chutz, kachach achat mi b'fnim divirav Yehuda. Just like there's a single oat on the outside, because there's only one box on the outside. So to internally, it must conform to that and have only a single oat on the inside. You don't need that. And Rabbi Yehuda agrees to me about this. That if a person has two tefillin shel yad and no tefillin shel rosh, then or alachat mehen, you put a piece of parchment over one of them to make it into a single unit now, and then you put it on. So now, what he is suggesting is that you can convert a tefillin shel rosh into tefillin shel yad by putting a single piece of parchment over and making it into a single unit, into a single oath. But obviously, the four parchments inside of the tefillin shel rosh are still separate. So what he shows from that is, there's no need to glue the parchments together. As long as all four are found in the single compartment, that's enough. You don't need to glue them together or stitch them together. And I can prove to that to you because Rabbi Yehuda agrees to me that you can convert a tefillin shel rosh into a tefillin shel yad. The Gemara says, Moda, Rabbi Yehuda agrees, Hainu Plumtayu. That's exactly what Machloka. Rabbi Yehuda says you need to stitch them together. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying, oh, Rabbi Yehuda says you don't need to stitch them together. So there's no Machloka. So Amarava, Mitvarav, Rabbi Yossi, Chazer Bo Rabbi Yehuda. He says, that's what Rabbi Yossi is saying, that Rabbi Yehuda backed away from his position. That's what it means, Moda. He agreed to my position in the end. Ini, is that really true? Vashalach Rab Chananya, Mishmeid Rabbi Yochanan. Tefillah shel yad osim ota shel rosh. You can make a tefillah shel yad into a shel rosh. Shel rosh ain osim ota shel yad. If it's ain moridim mikdusha chamura lekdusha kala. Because you can't be moridim mikdusha. It's malim bikodesh v'ain moridim. So here you can upgrade a tefillah shel yad to a tefillah shel rosh, but you can't downgrade a tefillah shel rosh down to a tefillah shel yad. So then how could it be that Rabbi Yehuda really agrees, or even Rabbi Yossi thinks that you can convert a tefillah shel rosh into a tefillin shel yad? Lo kasha haba tikta ha bechadita. It depends whether it's new or old. If they're already used, then there's imbued kedusha inside of them, and tefillin shel rosh, designated tefillin shel rosh, you can't downgrade them to tefillin shel yad. Now then, if you made them to be tefillin shel rosh and tefillin shel yad, but you have yet to wear them, yet to use them, then you can convert the rosh to the yad because they haven't had this kedusha that's been imbued in them because they haven't used them as a tefillin shel rosh yet. The one who says, so Gemara in Sanhedrin, Gemara in Megillah, and Brachot, that we have a concept of what's called hazmana milta. If you prepare something to be used in a particular way, does that already imbue it with the kedusha? So there is a machloka there, whether you have to use it in order for it to be imbued with kedusha, or simply preparing it for that particular usage, is that enough to imbue it with the kedusha? It also has impact on the negative. If you make something into a bathroom, but you have yet to use it as a bathroom, does it already have a shame bathroom, and therefore you can't convert it into a Beit Knesset or convert it into something that is of Kedusha? So that will be determined by Hazmana Milta. When you prepare something, does it already imbue it in Kedusha? According to the one who says that if you already prepare it to be a Tefillin Shel Rosh, that makes it into Tefillin Shel Rosh, then you can't convert it to a Tefillin Shel Yad anymore. So the difference will be that he made it Tznai. If you make it out Tznai, which says that if I need it for Tefillin Shel Yad, I can convert it to Tefillin Shel Yad, that will work, because if you have yet to use it for Tefillin Shel Rosh, then you can use that tnai to allow you the option to move it into tefillin shel yad. So that's according to one who says it's mana milta. Now, why is it, or how do you know that the tefillin shel rosh are more kadosh than the tefillin shel yad? So Rashi over here brings something which has major impact later on in the Gemara, and something that we've discussed before, which is, he says, rubo shel shakai naseh b'shel rosh. The majority of the Shem Hashem of Shakai is on the Shel Rosh, because you have Shin v'Dalet that are found on the Shel Rosh. Aval b'Shel Zroa ain ele Yud. Yud on the Yad. So now, Rashi is saying the Shin, we know, is on the printed on the sides of the Tefillin Shel Rosh. So that's the Shin. The Dalet is the knot in the back of the Tefillin Shel Rosh. And then on the Tefillin Shel Yad, when you tie the Tefillin Shel Yad, you have this little knot that sticks up, which is the Yud. So that makes up the Shem Hashem. Now, that means, and this has important impact, which is that Rashi is saying that there is Kedusha imbued in the boxes of the Tefillin, which we know, but also in the straps of the Tefillin. Because he's saying that the letters of the straps of the Tefillin are part of what forms the Shem Hashem. And therefore, if that's the case, then the straps of the Tefillin have the same level of Kedusha, or maybe at least somewhat close to the Kedusha of the Bayit. That means you have to treat them the same way. The problem, this is what the Bayit Tosfot in other places point out, that that's not the halacha. The straps are considered to be Tashmishei Kedusha, whereas the Batim are considered to be Dvarim Shel Kedusha. And if it's only a Tashmishei Kedusha, that means that it doesn't have any inherent Kedusha. And according to Rashi, given that the letters are there, it should have inherent Kedusha in it. And so therefore the Bayit Tosfot disagree with Rashi on this point. And you have to say that the reason it's Tefillin Shel Rosh is more kadosh than the Tefillin Shel Yad is for one of two reasons. Either it's higher up, it's something on top of the head instead of on the arm, and we know that the head is more chashuv than the arm, or because of what the pasuk says, that veru kol me'aretz kishem Hashem nikra lecha, that's said about the Tefillin Shel Rosh, not it's said about the Tefillin Shel Yad. Because the Tefillin Shel Rosh are an oath for the public, the Tefillin Shel Yad are only an oath for the person themselves. Vayol oth al yadcha is a oath for you, not for others. Whereas the Zikaron ben Einecha is for others, that the Tefillot are made for others. Baruch kol me'aretz kishem Hashem nikra elecha. So for that reason, the Kedusha of the Shel Rosh is greater than that of the Shel Yad, as opposed to Rashi over here, who says that it's driven by the number of letters. Right, Tana Banan, here's the question that comes up. This is the major machloket that lives till today, which is, how do you put the parshiot in the Tefillin? So this happens to be a major machloket in the Rishonim. We only are familiar with the Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam, but there are actually numerous opinions within the Rishonim as to how to put the Parshiot in. I sent out for you this morning, I sent you the Rabad and the Shimusha Rabba also, which you have there, four sets of tefillin, and they're all determined by what the Gemara is about to say in the next two lines. Rashi and the Rambam, the Rabbeinu Tam, the Shimusha Rabba and the Itur, and the Rabad, right, which also gives you a fourth position over here. So now that is driven by the ambiguous, cryptic way in which the Gemara now spells out how you put the Seder HaParshiot. Ketzad Sidran. What is the order of the Parshiot? Kadeshli, Vayakya V'yecha Miyamin. Kadeshli and V'yecha on the right side. Shma, V'yayim Shemoa, Mismo, are on the left side. Seems pretty straightforward, right? Those on the right side, those on the left side. V'atanya Ipcha. Uh-oh, we have a brayta that says just the opposite. Amar Abaye Lokasha, Kamino Shel Koreh, Kamino Shel Meniach. One of them has to do with the person standing opposite you and reading it. One has to do with the person who's wearing them. So they will be an opposite, meaning that if you have the parshiot just reverse, then depending if it's one, the one facing you, or it's you, then that is the determining factor as to the order of the parshiot. Which one is which? Fakoreh, Koreh Kisidran. And the one who reads them in order. So Rashi over here says, Kaseder Shein Ketuvim BaTorah. What does that mean, he reads them in order? That means that he reads them in the order in which they're written in the Torah. Muktam, muktam, u'muchar, muchar. So Rashi basically says two things in that statement. Number one is, the determinant is the person facing you. The person facing you is the Koreh, the one who's reading it. So he reads them Kisidran, in the order that they're in the Torah. So Rashi reads this very literally. Tarabanan, Ketzad Sidran. What is the order of the parshiot? For the person who's facing the one who's wearing tefillin, Kaddishli is the first parshia in the Torah of tefillin. Vayakev Yach is the second one. That goes from the right. First one on the right is going to be Kadesh. The second one from the right is going to be Vayakev Yach. And then small, Shema comes before Vaya im Shamo, which is after those first two parshiot. So the third box is going to contain the Shema, and the fourth box is going to contain Vaya im Shamo. When you're facing the individual from right to left, it's Kadesh, Vaya Kivyecha, Shema, Vaya im Shamo. That's the way that Rashi reads it. The Rabbeinu Tam, like Rashi, believes that it's determined miyamina koreh, determined by the person who is reading the tefillin from the outside. So he agrees with Rashi on that point, but he disagrees with Rashi as to the layout of the parshiot. He says that, why did the Gemara break it into two pieces? If Rashi's right, it should just written all four parshiot in a row. Why does it say these two on the right, these two on the left? There must be some significance to splitting them into two different categories. And therefore he says, just like on the right side, when you say you put it in order, it means Kadesh, Vayakiv Yecha, the outside one comes first. Then the second parsha, Kadesh is first, then Vayakiv Yecha. So too on the left side, Shema, Vayayim, Shemoa are in the order that they're written in the Torah, with the one on the outside being first, and then Vayayim, Shemoa being on the inside. So for the Rabbeinu Tam, from the right side you have Kadesh and Vayakiv Yecha. From the left side you have Shema and Vayayim, Shemoa. So he has his Shema and Vayayim, Shemoa flipped from the way that Rashi and the Rambam learn it, because he says that both sections here are telling you from the outside in what is the nature of the parshiot. Kadesh, Vayayacha, and on the left side from the outside in is Shema, and then Vayayim Shamoa. Now, there is logic to what he's saying. It's not crazy, because they are dealing with two different parshiot. We're dealing with two parshiot from Shmot and two parshiot from Barim, and represent different things. The parshiot of Tefillin and the parshiot in general are much different than in Shmot. Their purpose and the reason for them given in Shmot is different than Dvarim. And so therefore you're talking about two units. You're talking about the unit of Shmot and the unit of Dvarim. And in each unit you start with the outside and move in. So in each unit you have Kadesh and then Vayayacha and then Shema and Vayayim Shemoah. That's what the Rabbeinu Tam says. Now, the Rabbeinu Tam did not just invent this. He was a tremendous lamdan and a Mefalpel and a Medayek and able to take things and read them in unbelievable ways. So it's not just that he read the Gemara here and through text proof he says that Rashi's wrong. He brings proof to his position, and they are both relying on the fact that they got this Mesorah from the Gaonim. And he says that Rabbeinu Tam says, V'chein Rav Haigon. Rav Haigon does it the way that I do it. So he's just citing precedence now. He's not just saying that that's what the Gemara means. He's saying, I found that there are Gonim that do what I do. So I'm not just a newcomer to town and changed everything. I'm going back to the old Mesorah. Rashi changed it. I have the Mesorah from Rav Haigon. And then we find also that it brought in the Tshuvat HaGonim, Rav Yossi Tovi Leim, that he also says the same thing. And in addition to that, he says that, we find this in other places, that when they dug up the tefillin in Yechezkel's grave in Iraq, in Baghdad, Yechezkel was known to be buried in Iraq. My family that comes from Iraq were known as what's called Shomrei Kivrei HaNevi'im. They were the guards of the Kvarim of the Nevi'im. It was a reference to Yechezkel's grave. When they open up Yechezkel's grave, they find in there tefillin that were in the Geniza, and they take out those tefillin. And they want to see, are they Rashi's tefillin or they are Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin? And that's the machloket. What did they find? And the Rambam and the Shuta Rambam says, Amrlu Yechachamim Ne'manim, Shepitcho Tefillin Shal Rav Gaon Rav Hai, Zatzalu Matzu Shein Ktuvim Al Seder Shemati B'Chibur. And they were written in the way that I said, meaning like the way that Rashi says, and not like the way that the Rabbeinu Tam. So everybody's claiming the Rav Hai as being their precedent. The Torah spoke, of course, Rav Hai as being backing the view of the Rabbeinu Tam. And now the Rambam is saying that, well, we found Rav Hai's tefillin, and they told me from good sources that Rav Hai's tefillin followed that of Rashi, like my shot, the Rambam says, and not like that of the Rabbeinu Tam. You can see this in the Smag, where he says, Mikomakom Nagu Be'eretz Edom, Be'eretz Yishmael, K'divi Rabbeinu Shlomo, K'divi Rabbeinu Moshe, like the Rashi and the Rambam. V'gam Shalchu K'tav Me'eretz Yisrael, Sh'nafla Bima Shal Kever Yechezkel, that the Bima that was over the Kever Yechezkel, Masushan Tzfilin Yesheni, Ma'od K'seder Rabbeinu Moshe V'Rashi, that followed or complied with the order of the Parshiot according to Rashi and the Rambam. So again, both of them are trying not only to prove it from the wording in the Gemara. Rashi's focus on a correct Sidran, has been in order of the Torah. The Rabbeinu Tam's focus on the fact that they break it into two components, but they're also both citing that they have better precedents or more accurate Mesorah, because the people before them did like they did. And that's what the Rabbeinu Tam is suggesting over here. So Rabbi Hedel Tam is not some newfangled thing. He's trying to say that this is the way they did it until Rashi changed it. Now, the other two shitot are the Shimush Rabba and the Yitor, we said, and then the Rabbah or the Raivut, who say that it goes Mimiyamin HaMeiniach. That they say it goes from the right side of the person placing the tefillin on, and not Mimiyamin HaKoreh. Which means that the din here, where it says one of them is HaKoreh, one of them is Meiniach, we just assume that the Koreh was the one, because of the last line of the Gemara, Koreh, Koreh, Kisidran, that the Koreh was the one that we already had defined before. They say no, the one pressure that was defined before based on the Meiniach. But then a Koreh, Kisidran. So that's what he says, the Shimush Rabba and the Yitor say, it's the way that they're in the order of the Torah, and based on the Meiniach. So what he says is that you have the exact opposite of Rashi. To the left, you're going to have Kadesh. The next one over to the right is going to be Vayakav Yecha. After that, Shema, and then Vayayim Shemoa. He has the tefillin exactly the opposite of Rashi, because he says it's based on the Meiniach, but Koreh Kesidran. You have to have them in the order that they're in the Torah. And therefore, he says that it's just the opposite of Rashi. There are many, many of the Sfaradim and the Kabbalists wear Shimush Rabba tefillin at Mincha time in order to accomplish also wearing the tefillin of the Shimush Rabba. He also has something we'll see in the Bali Tos later on, a certain size, that the boxes have to be a certain size because of a Mesorah that he has, and it's quoted by the Balei Tosafot in the name of the Shimush Rabba. And then the Rabban says that it's Mimin HaMeiniach, but he has it like the Rabbeinu Tam. So it's the same thing as the Meiniach, but he has, starting on the left side, Kadesh and Vayakav Yecha, and then from the right side in, he has Shema and then Vayayim Shamoah. So he's basically just the mirror image of the Rabbeinu Tam, but based on the side of the Meiniach. So now, the question of the Meiniach versus the Koreh, over here, reason probably that Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam get a lot of press, and they get more precedence, both because they were great, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam sway halacha very heavily within the world of Ashkenaz, but more importantly, the tefillin shorosh are supposed to be a siman or an oath for others. And therefore, it makes a lot of sense that Mimina Koreh, that when you're looking at the parashat of the tefillin, that they should be in the order of the one reading from the outside, and not the one who is Meiniach the tefillin. As opposed to tefillin shel yad, whereby it's a oath for you, where that should be determined by you. Now, the Rabbeinu Tam has an issue then with the tefillin shel yad, that's what the Balei Tosafot say over here. Mechilta mashma v'peirush akuntres. And the milchilta, in the midrash halacha, in Shmot, it sounds like Rashi. But parashat vayakiv yachitani yatam bedalet mekum roma tzkir parashat tefillin, Kadesh, Rabbi Yecha, Shema, Vayayim, Shemoah. List them straight off in order. Mikan Amru, Mitzvah, Tfilin, Arba, Parshiot. Rakani, Kodvan, Kisidran. You write them in order. Vim, Kadvan, Shalok, Kisidran, Ganzu. If you write them out of order, then you have to put them in Gnisa. Mashma, Kaseder, Shishanan, Beresha. Sounds like the order that they gave in the beginning of the Midrash Halacha. Kadesh, Rabbi Yecha, Shema, Vayayim, Shemoah. You have to write them in that order. Vayashit, Chod, Ktivata, Sofer, Kamar. Vayin, Kovim, Tfilin, Kaseder, Zeh. He says you have to write them in order, but then after you've written them in order, you redistribute them based on what the Rabbeinu Tam says. So going through the time, you still have to write them in order, but then you have to then distribute them not in order. Bein zeh nira klal. Says that doesn't make any sense. Ubishimusha rabba, b'tikun tefillin, mashma k'peir shakuntres. Shimusha rabba sounds like Rashi. Mezele shano, m'shavei parsha de kadesh miyamin b'beit ha-kamo. Parsha de samuch lei b'beit ha-tinyona. Yaakov Yechel, Parsha de Shema B'Shlishit, the Parsha of Vayam Shema B'Revit. It sounds like Rashi, just, he doesn't know it over here, that the Shemusha Rabba has the same order as Rashi, just flipped, because he says it's Mitzad HaMeiniach, not Mitzad HaKoreh. And then if you look down in the Shita Mekubetzet, in Ot Vav, it says over here, Yesh Menichim Shnei Zugot, Kedei Letzei Tidei Shneihem. Some people put on two pairs of tefillin, in order to be Yotzei, both Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam. So, V'yesh Omrim, L'vikach Tov V'Vareich HaShayad, Ulaniach Sharosh below bracha. That's why you should put on the yad and then the rosh without a bracha. The Tamla Davart, imistamba shal yad lo plige. Because maybe in the yad they don't argue. Rabbeinu Baruch Amar, dechiechi di plige be sharosh, plige nami bishel yad. That just like they argue on the sharosh, the order of the parashiyot and the shal yad according to Rabbeinu Tam is also different than Rashi. Va'apagav dektiva lo plige. Even though they don't argue about writing the order, so first you write Kadesh. V'achar kach v'yakiv yecha. U'meiniach makom chalak lichtov v'yayim shamoa. Then you leave a blank space, write v'yayim shamoa. Dev dila shma kaseder. To then go back and write shma in order. HaKatuv B'Torah, like the order they're written in the Torah. V'achach chozer v'kotei v'ayayim shmoa v'kamom chalak, sheniach. And then you put in v'ayayim shmoa in the place that you left blank. So the Rabbeinu Tam has to acknowledge the mechilta that has to be written in the way they're written in the Torah. His problem is that he can't do that on a single cloth when you're writing four parshiot. Right morning, you can do kadesh, v'avyachah shma v'ayim shmoa. It's just like Rashi. So, but Rabbeinu Tam says no, that even in the shalyad, you have to do it in a different order. So what he says you do is you write kadesh, v'avyachah, blank space, then write shma, then come back and write v'ayim shmoa. That's how he gets the four parshiot in the order that he wants, even in the tefillin shalyad, but still complies with the mechilta to write them in the order of the Torah. So that also, what the Shita Mekubetzet brings over here, is sometimes many of the Sfaradim also do this, have a minhag to wear two pairs of tefillin. You can see them wearing a shel rosh, but they have one in front of the other. We're going to see that within the Gemara, that there's enough room on the head for two pairs of tefillin shel rosh. It's not clear whether that means side by side or back to back. Most believe it's back to back. And that means that you can put on two pairs of tefillin. And that's what they do. They wear one tefillin inside of another pair of tefillin, two tefillin on the head, one of Rashi, one of Rabbeinu Tam, in order to yotze both deot. The same is true by shel yad, that there's room to put on two shel yads. The Gra is very against putting on tefillin to Rabbeinu Tam. That's quoted by the Shud Min HaShemayim, where he says, V'inei HaGrosh, lo bitel atzmo mimitzad aseizu, kol ha-yom kulo, heniach rach tefillin shel Rashi, ayin masei rav, siman zayin, bramro, shim nirtze letzeit, kol ha-shitot, nitztarach laniach, shishim v'arba zugot tefillin. You have to put on 64 different pairs of tefillin in order to capture all the different nuances or different opinions amongst the Rishonim. Shemavad v'shito rashi v'bein tam, yesh od shito d'arabad. V'cheinim aniach ha-parshiot mushkav o me'umad. But there, in addition to the four different deyot over here, you have the difference in the Rabbeinu Tam lying down and standing up. Even though, as I noted before, the irony is that even the Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin, they do not lay down the parshiot like the Rabbeinu Tam would have wanted. They put them upright, like Rashi says. So it's not Rabbeinu Tam l'shitato when they make those tefillin. And so once you get through all these different permutations, you're going to end up with 64 different pairs of tefillin. And a lot of other nuances that come up in machloket and the Rishonim, you're going to be choshesh, then you're going to be putting on tefillin all day. But Gra is very against putting on that of the Rabbeinu Tam, because that opens up Pandora's box. When you don't paskin halacha, you need to paskin. We paskin like Rashi. Rashi has the strongest evidence in his favor. Rabbeinu Tam has some good questions, some evidence against him. But Rashi's case, as we saw from the Mechilta, is very strong. And especially for the Rabbeinu Tam, when you start writing parshiot out of order, that again, somewhat indicates that Rashi must have been right, because it's the easier way to do it. Makes more sense that way. And for that reason, if you paskin like Rashi, you should put on tefillin like Rashi, and not involve the Rabbeinu Tam. Shud Min HaShemayim says, Amnam Inei B'Kitvei Ariza Muvash Shita D'Shimush Rabba. The Ari brings down the Shimush Rabba, which we noted before. Many of the Kabbalists put on tefillin of Tzvi Shimush Rabba at Mincha time. Rak Binyan Godel HaTefillin. That's only about the size of the tefillin. V'lo Binyan Sidur HaParshiot. Kein Lo Uva B'Zohar Rak Shtei Shitot. And in the Zohar also, there are only two opinions. Anikrot HaShem Rashi V'Rabbeinu Tam. They follow the positions of Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam. And then he brings an unbelievable statement, which this should Min HaShemayim brings an unbelievable statement. Beishivo, and the response Min HaShemayim was, Elu Velu Direlu Gim Chaim. They're both right, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Uchach Malokat Demata, Kach Malokat Demalo. Same Malokat that you have here is the same Malokat up above in Shemayim. Kosh Baruch Omer Havayot Bamsa. Hashem says that the Havayot go in the middle. Chol Pamaya Shemalo Omerim Havayot Kisidran. And the rest of the heavenly entourage says, Haviyot Kisidran. And of course, that would then favor the Rabbeinu Tam, because Hashem is passing like the Rabbeinu Tam. And you see in the Ktav Yad Paris, that it's the opposite way around. Kodesh Baruch Hu Kifi Kurvat HaParshiot Kachi, that has to do with the order of the Parshiot. And Kol Pamay Shemalo Omrim Haviyot Bamsa. So they got the answer from Shemayim, which is that they also argue in Shemayim about this same fact. And the question of attribution to Kodesh Baruch Hu is subject to a machloket in the Ktav Yad Shut Min HaShemayim as to whether Hashem paskins like the Rabbeinu Tam or paskins like Rashi. Although, unlike the Gra, the Shulchan Aruch, and the Ramah, all say that people should be choshesh for putting on tefillin to Rabbeinu Tam. The Chabadnikim are very makbid on that. And Sfaradim also, and the Kabbalists also are makbid to put on tefillin like the Rabbeinu Tam. And really, in the last, I would say, 20, 30 years, there's been a huge resurgence in people putting on tefillin to Rabbeinu Tam. Likely, or most likely, because of the fact that the cost of tefillin have dropped, and the ability to make tefillin is much easier today, and therefore the ability to acquire tefillin to Rabbeinu Tam, it's not a major acquisition like it was in the past, and therefore people have the opportunity to put on both tefillin to Rashi and tefillin to Rabbeinu Tam. Although the Shulchan Aruch does qualify that and say, Yirei Shemayim, Yitzei Yidei Shneim, Yaseh Shtei Zugot Tefillin, Lo Yaseh Kein Elamishim Mugzak Umifursam Bechasidut. And that the Mishnah Berurah rails against those people that change over the Rashi to the Rabbeinu Tam tefillin in the middle of Chazarat HaShatz, in the middle of davening. And he also points out that even if you're just going to put them on at the end of davening, you still need that qualification of being someone who is mukzak mufusam bechasidut. That's because kevin sholam noagim kerashi nirek yura mishol chodesh lachmir al atzmo bazeh imenu mukzak shemachmir al atzmo gam kevin bishar dvarim. The Mishnah Berurah brings also that you can't, based on a shuta radbaz and in other sources, that you can't move the tefillin shell to Rabbeinu Tam to tefillin shell Rashi or Rashi to tefillin Tam. You can't move them back and forth. Not the batim, not the straps, and not the parshiot. Because whatever is kosher for one is pasul for the other, and therefore you always risk being morid b'kodesh, although there are achronim that favor saying that because Rashi is more accepted and has broader support within poskim, that that is always considered to be malin b'kodesh, and is also considered to be the default if you find tefillin or find parshiot, that they are following the sheet of Rashi, and therefore they're more makil to say that upgrading to Rashi, or if you find parshiot, you can assume their Rashi is parshiot, because of that fact. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Lamed Daled, Amud Bet.